Welcome to the Eye on the U podcast, Miami Herald's Miami Hurricanes podcast. I'm David Wilson. I'm joined, as always, on the other line by Susan Miller Degnan, our Miami football beat writer here at the Herald. Susan, what's going on?
Everything's great. Back from the great Pacific Northwest to the beautiful Southeast.
And we're inverting the episode a little bit. Usually when we talk basketball, we do that in the second half. This week, it's the biggest story in town. We got Michelle Kaufman, who covers Inter-Miami and Miami basketball for us for the Herald. Miami getting that huge win against North Carolina on Tuesday. Have their biggest regular season game in I don't even know how long this Saturday against Florida State. Michelle, how's life covering a basketball school?
Well, yeah, it's. I would have never thought that UM and FSU would be on top of the ACC. I don't think anyone else thought that either. So, you know, Miami was picked 12th in the ACC preseason poll, and they've been sitting on top for weeks now. They're still unranked, which, you know, after beating Duke and North Carolina, not just beating North Carolina, but the way they beat them, to go ahead by 27 points at halftime, it was the largest halftime lead over North Carolina in 25 years. And it broke all kinds of records. That game was just, it was so incredibly lopsided on both sides of the court. Miami just absolutely dominated and destroyed North Carolina, which nobody expected. And, you know, that's coming off a win over Duke and Syracuse and a 1-point loss to Florida State, which then beats Duke by 1 point in overtime. So Miami FSU on Saturday is a monster of a game.
Yeah, it's biggest regular season game since when? Can you even think of the last time that you've been like thinking this?
Well, I mean, it depends what you count. You know, neither one of them is ranked. So, I mean, if you count, you know, when they played, you know, number two Duke, or they played number one Duke or North Carolina, those were huge games when they were playing a team that was ranked when Duke played here in 2016 or 2017, 2016, I think, when they were ranked number two and Miami beat them at home here. And the students stormed the floor and
Devon
all that
Reed,
stuff.
Right? That was the Devon Reed.
Yeah, that was a huge game. So they've had some big games against Duke and Carolina, but this game is, you know, it's a revenge game. I mean, they've only lost one game of the last 11. Yeah. They have won 10 out of 11 games, and the one loss was by 1 point to Florida State on a little bit of a questionable call on the final play of the game.
Michelle, I've been reading your columns and your stories, and they're really good. And I'm trying to figure out, I know that fans don't really show up at these games. And I think at North Carolina, there were more fans, right? What kind of difference does that make for something like basketball, do you think, or does it make a difference?
No, it makes a huge difference. I mean, they've been able to win without fans, but it makes a huge difference. I mean, this team, I've been saying it now for, well, I've been saying it for about 25 years now, but this program deserves to have more of a following. I mean, unfortunately for Miami does not have, you know, college basketball is not in the campus culture at UM. It's just not. And even, you know, yes, when the teams are ranked and on ESPN, all of a sudden the students show up and they're mugging for the ESPN cameras. But week in and week out, the Miami fans, and I'm saying this, and, you know, I got a little bit of pushback on Twitter, but it's stupid because I am a UM graduate. I've been covering this program since 1998. And actually, I covered it from 1985 to 87. Then I've covered it since 1998. So believe me when I tell you that I have been in hundreds of games of this team, and the fans do not, the students do not show up. There are games where I look over at the student section and there are literally this year, there was a game where there were two students total in the student section. Okay. Now, and then the haters will say, oh, well, they were on break, blah, blah, blah. UM is a commuter school. There are thousands of students who go to UM who live in South Florida who could go to these games during the break, and they don't. It's just not part of the sports culture down here, college basketball. And what I've been saying and preaching for a long time is that UM basketball deserves, the students should go support this team. They have an on-campus arena. It's free. They don't have to do anything. My daughter is about to tent for 6 weeks to go. She goes to Duke to go to the North Carolina game. She's very excited. They had the tenting test last night, 100 question Duke quiz on, Duke trivia, basketball trivia. She has a group of 12 people, and they had to go to Cameron last night and take a 1 hour, 100 question test. There were 175 groups of students, only 70. The top 70 scoring teams get the chance, the honor, to sleep in a tent for 6 weeks leading up to the North Carolina game. By the way, my daughter called this morning, super excited that she is one of the 70. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. I didn't know whether to congratulate or lament. But so anyway, you know, a lot of the ACC schools just have a great basketball tradition, not only just Duke and Carolina, but we're talking about Virginia, Syracuse, Georgia.
I slept in the Carrier Dome one night my freshman year to camp out for a
game. There you go. Yeah. I mean, you know, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, UVA, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest. All of those schools have really good tradition. And Miami right now, still, Miami is number one in first place in the ACC and dead last in attendance. Dead last in attendance with 3,000 per game. Now, yes, the North Carolina crowd was great. And, you know, they need
I think
to
it'll
bring
be great
that,
Saturday, yeah.
They need to bring that on Saturday, and they need to bring that every game because it does, in the games that are close, it will give the Miami team energy that they just don't get when the students aren't there.
Yeah. Miami, Florida State. That's probably the biggest Miami, Florida State basketball game. I mean, I'm sure they've had some good runs where they were both pretty good, I think.
But not earlier. 1-2. No, they didn't have any.
Never like this. Yeah.
No, they've never had any runs where they're 1-2. I mean, absolutely not. No, this is a huge game.
So it's
Michelle, I have to tell you, at least with football, this is true. Sometimes I think they're better off not being ranked. I'm talking about in the beginning, you know, it just somehow something happens when you get ranked.
Yeah.
And you're not used to it.
But yeah, they should. I mean, I don't know. I just think they've won 10 out of 11 games. They've beaten all these teams. And, you know, and the big sort of the national whatever the narrative is, you know, the ACC is, you know, the ACC is down this year.
Thanks.
You know, the ACC is down this year. Well, I mean, the ACC is down. Why? Because Miami and FSU are on top. Is that what makes
Virginia's
it down?
Bad? But I think no matter what, Miami, there's a pretty good chance they're gonna be ranked Monday at this point. They get like blown out by Florida State on
right.
Saturday.
If they get blown out by Florida State, no. But if they play them well or beat them, they absolutely will be ranked. I mean, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this run, even with the loss to Florida State, that close loss, I think it was kind of the validating run this team, maybe not for themselves needed, but I think for the outsiders, both the national media that is not ranking, they, you know, had Miami, I think like 28 after the Duke game, if you look at the others receiving votes. And like you said, it's hard for me to get, you know, all these Miami fans get upset about the team not being ranked. It's hard for me to get upset about that when, like you said, my 3,000 people per like it's they had to validate that. What were they at one point when the before after the Duke game, what was their record, like 12-3, 13-3, something like that? They had to validate that by putting together a real run against good competition. And Duke, Florida State, North Carolina, that was a validating stretch, even with that
losing by one to FSU. I mean, that game was back and forth. Yes. By the way, speaking of FSU, this stat that came out the other night was, I thought was just, you know, Leonard, look, I covered Leonard here when he was at UM. That guy is such a good coach. And Stan Jones, his assistant, that duo of Leonard Hamilton and Stan Jones is, they are really good. So listen to this stat, kind of tells you everything you need to know about Leonard. Leonard Hamilton leads all coaches in the entire history of basketball since 1948. Okay. No other coach than Leonard Hamilton has won more games. He has 55 wins. Get this, 55 wins over top 25 teams when his team is unranked. Wow. So Leonard Hamilton has won 55 games unranked with his team unranked over top 25 teams, which to me, you know, A, it says something, it says a lot about him as a coach. It also maybe says something about the rankings that his team is clearly never ranked. But Leonard Hamilton is a great coach. And Leonard Hamilton is a thorn in every coach's side. Nobody likes to play a Leonard Hamilton team because Leonard's teams, they are not like, you know, they're not all the McDonald's All-American, All-Star, fancy schmancy. No,
they're just all guys. 7 feet 2 inches.
They're 7 feet 2. They're really tall, but also they work hard and they defend. And I mean, I remember when he was coaching here at Miami, if a guy would miss one assignment, if a player would miss one defensive assignment, he would yank him, even if it was the star of the team, yank him from the floor, give him an earful, and then put him back in. But he is so much about defense and hard work and grit. And that's what they did the other night. I watched the game against Duke and the game against Miami too. Those teams, those Leonard teams, are just relentless. And then the other stat about FSU that I want to bring up, which I think is really important too, is that they currently have the longest, I think they've won 14 in a row in overtime. They've won 14 straight games in overtime, which leads, I mean, it's the longest streak in basketball. So his teams are very poised in overtime, and they beat, you know, they continuously beat teams that are ranked. So it's going to be a very tough game. It's going to be a very tough game. And by the way, a lot of FSU fans will show up at the Watsco Center, because I have been at UNFSU games where it feels like it's 50-50, and I'm not even kidding. It feels like 50. You hear the na, 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 and you're at the Watsco Center, and that thing is loud. That war chant is so loud when UM is playing against FSU. So again, I will say, if you know the UM students, if they want to come out and make some noise, this would be the day to do it on Saturday at 2:00.
Yeah, I kind of expect it to be a great atmosphere because, like you said, there will be a lot of Florida State fans. It's tiny, you know, Watsco Center is tiny. They should be able to fill that up pretty easily, I think, for a game like this on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, you would think. What else is going on?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, because it's a tiny gym, it gets loud in there when it's like fully sold out, which has not happened. I can't even. Can you remember the last time it was sold out? Probably during the Bruce Brown, Lonnie Walker.
Well, season, during right? the, yeah. Probably back when Angel Rodriguez was here. It's been years.
It's been a long time.
Truly packed.
Truly packed. Watsco has its disadvantages where it's, you know, in terms of recruiting, like you said, when you only are drawing 3,000 or so people a game, you know, recruits don't want to play in that kind of atmosphere. But it also, I don't want to compare it to Cameron, but it does have that Cameron thing where it's tiny. And when it fills up, it gets really loud in there.
Yeah,
and I think that's absolutely what it could be like this weekend.
I mean, it should be fun. I'm expecting a great atmosphere. Like I said, the FSU fans down here are going to come out in big numbers. And, you know, the UM students did show up on Saturday. They showed up for the last game. And I think they will definitely show up. You know, it's Miami FSU. Come on. Whether it's football, basketball, it doesn't matter what sport. In baseball, when UM plays FSU, tennis, it doesn't matter what. UM-FSU is a huge rivalry. And now with the teams literally 1-2 in the ACC, Miami and FSU, it's unbelievable. They're ahead of Duke. They're ahead of Carolina. They're ahead of Virginia. They're ahead of all those teams. So it's really been an interesting year.
Yeah, a win would be huge for Miami in the like chase for winning a conference title because it puts you up 2 games on Florida State. And then you have the tiebreaker with Duke, who in all likelihood is going to be chasing that title down the stretch. So it would be a really advantageous position for them to be in going into the last, whatever, 10 or so games we have. It gets the end comes fast in college basketball, but Miami, it feels like they're getting better every game too. So I'm into this team. I think a lot of people are into this team. And I think
they're
we'll
playing
see
with
a
so
bit
much
Saturday.
Confidence. And, you know, again, we mentioned Charlie Moore last time. That guy has completely changed his team.
And they're old. We talked about it. They're old. Everyone on that team is like 24 years old. That matters.
They're all old. They're really old. They're older than they're older than some NBA teams. They really are. But they, you know, they have a lot of poise and they share the ball, and they're not, you know, they're not like freshmen who are all hotshot one and dones who want to show themselves off. These guys are 24-year-old veterans. And, you know, they're playing like a team. They are really playing like a team. And the way they're passing, the way they're spacing, the way they're spacing out around the court and just finding each other. And there's nobody selfish on that team. There is nobody selfish looking for stats on that team. They are really, you know, it's really absolutely the best team since the Angel Rodriguez days here. It's been really fun to watch.
All right, Michelle, I know you got to run, so we'll let you get going. Thanks for coming on, though, and talking some Miami basketball. It's starting to become a regular occurrence on this show, which I'm fine with. So maybe we'll get you back on next week.
Finally, right? Yeah. Finally. Yes.
Finally. And like I said, I think we'll see some of the fruits of the excitement really pop out on Saturday. Like you said, you know, it's a Tuesday night in Coral Gables. It's hard to get people down there. But Saturday afternoon, that place should be popping on Saturday, I think. You can follow Michelle on Twitter at Kauf Sports. She's got your Miami basketball coverage. She's also got a story she just told us about Breck Shea catching a snake in the middle of Inter-Miami practice today. So if you want to read about that, you can check that out in the Miami Herald and at MiamiHerald.com. Michelle, thanks for coming on.
All right. Bye, guys. Thanks,
thank you, Michelle.
All right. Bye, Susan. Bye, David.
Bye-bye.
All right, Susan, let's wrap up by talking some football. Not a whole lot of news in the last couple of weeks. We took last week off. I don't think we missed a whole lot. I guess Kevin Smith was the one piece of news last week. Miami hiring Kevin Smith mm-hmm. as their new running backs coach, former Ole Miss running backs coach, former FAU running backs coach, former running back at UCF.
And also
Southridge. Another local guy to help those recruiting efforts. Kind of needed that on the new staff. We're still seeing how it's piecing together. I guess the biggest news this week is that there's still no news sort of on the coordinator front. Defensive coordinator has been really quiet. There's not been a lot of reporting from anyone, really any names floated out there. Offensive coordinator has been the subject of a lot of focus this week. Reports from Football Scoop had Miami offering Jason Candle, Toledo's head coach, as their offensive coordinator. That would have been a slam dunk home run hire, but of course, you know, it's hard to lure a head coach away to be a coordinator. You know, it was kind of Hail Mary hire, you know, offer, I would think, a little bit there. The other name out there, Kendall Briles, conflicting reports there, I guess we could say. Local ESPN and I think 24/7 both reported that Briles turned down Miami to stay at Arkansas, got an extension out of it. It sounds like debate locally about whether he was actually offered the job. To me, it probably was all semantics. I think what's clear is Miami was interested in him, whether they ever made him a formal contract offer or just pursuing him and, you know, maybe was getting close to offering him, especially after Jason Candle, who I'm sure was the number one choice, pulled out, or at least at this moment was the number one choice, pulled out of consideration, I think is kind of doesn't really matter. What does matter is that Miami still doesn't have an offensive coordinator. And those two names were kind of the two biggest names, like the most frequently bandied about names over the last couple of weeks here. And now it's not totally clear what direction they might be going.
Yeah, I it's totally unclear. I think
for a while we thought it was going to be Kendall Briles, right?
Yeah, Kendall Briles I had on my radar for a long time. Everybody did, honestly.
Yeah.
And I thought actually that might happen. And I know I talked to people that said that definitely could happen. But obviously it didn't. Whether, you know, reportedly he was offered, reportedly he wasn't offered, you know, whether somebody leaked it out just so he could get, you know, a nice contract extension from Arkansas. I don't know. It would have been an interesting hire. He's a very good offensive coordinator. He has a lot of baggage just because of stuff that happened at Baylor. With his dad, and he was a major person on the staff,
right.
Although never directly implicated with this huge sexual scandal at Baylor. But the point is, he's not coming to Miami, and unless we're shocked by our next podcast, he's not. And I don't know who it's going to be. Again, I don't like it. Could be Mario. Mario Cristobal is deep into recruiting now.
Yes.
He's really putting everything into recruiting because signing day is coming up on February 2nd. And I think that's his main concern right now. I think he's a smart guy, and I'm sure he has this whole list of people, and he's started the feelers and all that good stuff. But right now it's kind of interesting. It is kind of getting late, but then again, he's a smart guy. I'm not sure what he has up his sleeves. I know that the pro, maybe it's an NFL guy, you know, I know the Super Bowl's coming up soon. And I'm not sure what order that would be, what's your thought on that? Whether he, you know, he'd go to signing day and then wait. The Super Bowl is late this year. It's February 13th. And I don't know. I know that like Ken Dorsey.
Right. I was going to say Dorsey is the one other name that has been mentioned that we think Miami would potentially be interested
definitely,
in. That,
yes.
We don't know his mutual interest, and obviously the Bills look poised to potentially make the Super Bowl. The season could end this week. I think they play the Chiefs on Sunday. So, you know, they're in a spot where if they go to the Super Bowl, is he going to be interviewing for a Miami offensive coordinator job between now and then? I don't know. I think it would really help to have an offensive coordinator for recruiting purposes. But at the same time, if you look at the list of targets for Miami, like the top guys they're targeting,
right?
It is a lot of offensive linemen, which, you know, that scheme matters a little bit, but Mirabal is much more important to have. And then a lot of defensive guys, defensive linemen for the most part. Obviously, they've got Joe Salvea already in place as the defensive line coach. So I think it's not like they're trying to get a quarterback right now, right? Like it would be impossible to land a quarterback, I think, if you didn't have an offensive coordinator in place. Or, you know, they're not really going after a lot of wide receivers, I don't think, now that Frank Ladson is committed. And they have, you know, Brian McClendon, obviously, would help in that regard too. But, like, I think they're in okay shape to wait and make, you know, you don't want to rush it. But at the same time, you know, if you wait, like, it gets harder and harder to pull guys away once they've like moved on to spring football and are really thinking about, you know, what's next at their current location, rather than their next destination. And I'm sure, like you said, just because there've been basically two names out there and both of them are not coming to Miami, we found out in the last couple of days, doesn't mean that there's not other names out there. And there'll be names that probably pop up once they're a little bit closer to coming to a decision. That's, you know, how reporting kind of works and how people, you know, that's how the biz works, basically.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think Dorsey, you know, that's a really tough call for Ken Dorsey. He would kill to get to Miami. He's always wanted to coach at Miami and feel slighted. I'm pretty sure that Miami's never really reached out to him. I mean, before this, you know,
right.
But the thing is also his name gets sexier and sexier each game they win or whatever, you know, he becomes like, it's hard to turn down NFL offers too, if he were to get any or some kind of promotion or I don't know, whatever. So, that should be interesting. I do think because they have Tyler Van Dyke, because they have a really good Mirabal offensive line coach and they're working on that. And, you know, because they have their running backs in place and they're, you know, they do have Jakari Brown. I don't know. I think they're in pretty good shape in that respect. So.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's something that, you know, if something happens by next week and it's a name that hasn't really been on the radar, I wouldn't totally be surprised. If it doesn't happen until after signing day, I'd be a little more surprised. But again, like I said, I don't think it's going to be crippling right now. It's much more important to just make a good hire than make a hire. Kevin Smith, we touched on him a little bit at the top. He's the one new assistant coach we have not really like talked about because we took last week off. Obviously brought Henry Parrish with him from Ole Miss. I think that's a pretty, you know, real solid depth pickup, a guy who's a good receiver as well. It's kind of funny. I remember in that 2020 class, it was like always kind of a debate, like who's your favorite running back from Miami, Henry Parrish, who was our player of the year, won like the Nat Moore Trophy, ran for more than 2,000 yards and led Columbus to state title. You know, there was John Chaney, who was kind of the top ranked guy for most of the time, played at Belen, Jesuit, and weird, like, you know, they were on like a ring tee offense, or they did at the time. Or Jalen Knighton, who was, you know, our Broward County player of the year. And Miami now has all three of them, which is kind of fun. I think those guys are all pretty close to, you know, to varying degrees. But obviously know each other pretty well. And it's a good little trio, I think, to work with. And then those two freshmen. But Kevin Smith seems like, you know, they had to get a local guy in, which is kind of what stood out to me, right? All the other guys they'd hired. Mirabal is obviously local, but McClendon, Salvea, both, you know, like they're Oregon guys, right? They're West Coast guys for the most part, or yeah. You know, they don't have the South Florida tie. And I think that'll help with Kevin Smith.
And also Ole Miss had a really good rushing offense this season.
Yeah.
They were ranked 12th nationally of 130 FBS teams, right? They averaged 217 yards a game. Their scoring offense was 24th nationally for 33.7. So that's good. I have a feeling he's a really good coach and a good recruiter. So, and I love that he's a local guy. So they lose Cameron Harris, but you're right. They have a nice trio now.
Yeah. It's a good position to be in there as well. Should we wrap up with some NIL stuff? Is there any other coaching stuff we should get to? I think we've got any other coaching stuff. Defensive coordinator, it's kind of interesting that it's just like we have not really heard anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just an open book. I don't really know at this point. I thought I knew offensive coordinator, but now that's, you know, we'll have to see. It's just kind of interesting that the two main assistant coaching positions are still up for grabs.
Yeah, and he's filling all the position coaches for the most
part.
We'll
have to see. But there's nothing. No, there's nothing else.
Oh, and Travaris Robinson. I forgot to mention that. Travaris Robinson.
Oh, and T-Rob.
Leaving for Alabama. Yeah.
Reportedly heading for Alabama. So
that's a big loss, obviously. He was really important to Miami's recruiting efforts. Anytime you lose a guy to Alabama, you know that they're well-respected and highly thought of.
Right.
I wonder what this means for DeMarcus Van Dyke, who, you know, we talked about it early on, like those two guys kind of felt a little redundant, both really good South Florida recruiters, obviously both really cornerbacks coaches. I do wonder if this makes it a little bit more likely that the DVD stays on. But again, I think whatever defensive coordinator comes in, we'll have a say with that too. And that's, I feel bad, like I said, like we've said, for the guys who are still hanging around from the last staff and doing a lot of good work on the recruiting trail right now. DVD, Stephen Field. I guess those are the only two now left, but those two guys, and then, you know, some of the behind the scenes guys, Ed Pata has been doing really good work on the recruiting trail. Is Todd?
I think Stephen. Yeah. I think Stephen Field is staying with UM or might stay.
I would expect that.
He's staying with UM. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a tricky situation for some of those guys to be in. A lot of stuff will change after signing day, I'm sure. I remember that happening with Manny Diaz too, right? I think where he got through that first signing day and then
exactly
changed up. I think they hired like Andy Vaughn and a couple other behind the scenes people. And that'll be when Mario, I think, kind of makes some moves there. But at the same time, like I said, these guys are doing a really good job on the recruiting trail right now. And a lot of guys in that recruiting office, a lot of guys who you see very visible out on the recruiting trail. Ed Pata, David Cooney, like there's a bunch of guys that I think have you know, earned their place basically at UM.
Yep.
Let's wrap up with the NIL stuff. A lot of money coming out and heading into the hands and pockets of a bunch of Miami players this week. John Ruiz, everyone's favorite eccentric player, signing a bunch of people to deals to promote his new Life Wallet app. Biggest one is Jake Garcia, which is kind of what's most interesting to me. Not surprising that like Tyler Van Dyke is going to make a lot of money this year off of his name, image, and likeness. Not surprising that Leonard Taylor or James, these superstars are, they're some of the most recognizable athletes in South Florida. Makes sense that they're making a lot of money. Jake Garcia, who obviously has not really played a whole lot, and if all goes according to plan for Miami, will not play a single snap basically this year, except for maybe garbage time and against whatever FCS team is on the schedule. But it's a little curious to stick around and not hit that transfer portal, I think.
Yeah. For right now, at least Jake Garcia has the highest, the most amount of money coming to him. And for these NIL deals, as far as, for this season and next season, for 2022 and 2023, Jake actually signed, who's represented by Malki Kawa, signed a first round management, a 2-year contract. And I haven't, the other guys that I've seen have all been 1-year contract, as far as I know. And 2-year contract making, I reported today, today is Thursday, that he's making $60,000 for 2022. And next year, the contract says he'll be making $85,000 per Kawa, who called me today. So that's, I don't know. I tweeted out. I said it seems like very nice money to me. $85,000 next year.
Yeah.
And the other guys are all kind of 1-year guys, and they're making, they're making decent. I like Leonard Taylor, Tyler Van Dyke, Gil Frierson. Are making $50,000 this coming year.
Yeah.
They have 1-year contracts. $50,000, that's pretty good. But Jake Garcia is getting $60,000 and $85,000 for the following year. And then guys like and some of these guys are represented by Drew Rosenhaus also.
Yes.
But today, for example, I learned that Don Chaney and Jalen Knighton, the running backs, are each, they have 1-year contracts, getting $40,000. I guess they'll get paid per month. Breshard Smith, a very young receiver, is getting $40,000 next year. DJ Skate, offensive lineman, getting $43,000. And DJ Ivy, the cornerback, the senior, is getting $43,000 for the year. And what they have to do is they just have to, they have community service events. They have to promote the companies of John Ruiz. Gil Frierson already put out a commercial for Life Wallet, the video that I saw today that they're, they're putting out on social media. But they're making decent money. And the interesting thing is that Jake Garcia, that second year, he was such a highly sought after recruit nationally, and Tyler Van Dyke did so well this year. So, it's known he's going to start, and Jake hurt his ankle surgery. Right. So he's a redshirt technically, but still, he would have to sit out for sure another year if Tyler doesn't get hurt this season, and you never know, but that second year is kind of a little more insurance. The $85,000 doesn't hurt.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, so the two things that have stood out to me, one is just like, obviously, hey, they're getting paid like that. It helps recruiting, but all the obvious things everyone's been talking about. Number two is, I've been wondering since the day this started of what the value is going, these companies are actually going to get out of, putting money behind players. And obviously I think you could say that about basically all advertising. But I think for John Ruiz, it's working, right? He's like getting a lot of good PR out of this. And, just by being the guy the first guy to do all this. You know, if there were a million companies doing this, I don't think it would have the same level of impact, but you know, he's every Miami fan's favorite billionaire right now. So it's working out for him. And then the other thing is the Jake Garcia thing is like you said, really interesting. 2 year escalating contract. Now the wording of that contract is going to be important, because what if Tyler Van Dyke decides to come back for another year and he's like, all right, I need to go start somewhere. I can't keep sitting on the bench. Well, what happens, right? Like,
yeah, I'm not really sure about that.
I don't think the contracts can be tied. I don't know this for sure. And you know, there's probably creative language you can put in the contract, but I don't think the contract can be tied to where Jake Garcia is playing in college. Especially considering it's like a national company that John Ruiz is signing him to promote.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Like, meaning if he transfers, he'll still get the money.
Probably. I think so. Yeah. I mean, there's probably creative language you can put in the contract to,
right.
But that is, you know, if he transfers, and I'm not saying, you know, I don't expect this to happen, but we're looking at a potential interesting test case scenario here. If he transfers and all of a sudden people are like, I don't want to pay him that money. He's not a Miami Hurricane anymore. It becomes, you know, we're so early into this era. What, it's 6 months basically right now, that there's still so much to be figured out. And that Jake Garcia contract stood out to me. I'm sure something similar has happened at other schools. Right. I'm not paying attention to every NIL deal, but to me, that was the one that really caught my eye, not just because of the money and not just because of the fact that he is going to be a backup this year in all likelihood, but because of that 2 year component that is wink, wink saying, hey, this is so you stay here and we're guaranteeing you a lot of money once you're the starting quarterback in 2023.
Yeah. I think that he gets that money. I saw something, I think Adam Arenado, somebody, marketing agent person, yeah, somebody said, yeah, that's, they'd have to get paid. So, yeah. And by the way, other player, what's also interesting is John Ruiz is, or the Ruiz family, they're spreading this among other players, other sports. He told me yesterday, I guess, that that 5 UM baseball players have been offered, and he was waiting to see if they accepted their agreements. Okay.
His son played baseball. Both sons, I think, played baseball at Miami.
Both sons played, right. One was a pitcher, and Johnny was a really good infielder. But and then Ruiz said that, he told me, quote, there are multiple UM basketball players who have been offered NIL deals, and I'm waiting to see their decisions. So now you got basketball too, and I guarantee you they're going to hit the female stuff soon. They keep talking about softball, and you know, obviously UM doesn't have a softball program, so we'll see what happens. But I do think that this is helping John Ruiz. And you know, he's getting a lot of pub out of this, and because of that, you know, a lot of ears are listening, and people are more aware of all this. So it's good for UM.
It's a win-win-win, really. Win for the players, obviously, win for the businessman, and you know, probably a win for Miami. If you know, if this translates into recruiting. And a recruiting advantage, which you definitely saw with Texas this last year, where it felt like Miami lost out on like 2 or 3 offensive linemen they were recruiting to Texas, because Texas had their own, I think, like rule brushing up the edge of illegality deal, where every offensive lineman in Texas gets a $50,000 contract, where, you know, it's all these are all like kind of first test case scenarios, like I said, where the NCAA really, I've said a lot, kind of like abdicated responsibility on this, and it means everyone is going to push into that gray area as much as possible. You saw it with Texas, like I said, and like the Jake Garcia one, that's what's interesting to me, is seeing what could come of that. I'm not saying obviously anything will come of it, but there is, it's a creative idea that, and the NCAA doesn't always like creativity from their member institutions, I guess we should say. But I think we can finish up there. You can follow Susan on Twitter at @SMillerDegnan, monitoring all this Miami football coaching search. We got National Signing Day coming up in a couple of weeks. Miami's got a big, big recruiting underclassmen weekend this week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Miami pull a couple, not new, not 2022 kids, but maybe a 2023 recruit or two join the fold this weekend with Miami set to have a lot of blue chip kids on campus, both local and national, because there's a big 7-on-7 tournament in Miramar this weekend too.
Right. By the way, I know we're running late, but long, but how early can, you know, does some of these kids commit? Could some of them are zealous and start committing?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting because Manny Diaz really made a point of like, we don't want to take guys' commitments really early for the most part.
Right.
You know, they made some exceptions. Lamar Seymour, who's Lawrence Seymour's brother, is their one commit right now in the 2023 class. And you know, that's like, his brother's at Miami, he's a Miami Central guy. Like, you know, he's going to probably stick with that commitment. But yeah, well, this will be, it'll be interesting to see if Miami gets like four commitments this weekend, then we'll know that things have changed in Coral Gables and with Mario Cristobal's approach. I'm actually not sure about what his history is with letting kids commit early. I think you got to pick your spots, right? If it's a Miami Northwestern, a Miami Central kid, you know, a local kid, you take that commitment early because it's good to get that momentum going, right? Where that guy can then be, you know, the leader of that recruiting class going forward. Like, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, like I think Tyler Johnson committed at one of these weekends, Jaquan's little brother. Like they're going to let kids like that commit. But yeah, I'm not sure how they're going to handle it, but I think they would love to get a couple to really get the ball rolling. Going into signing day, and then, you know, once signing day is passed, like you're fully on to 2023. So we're getting pretty close to that point anyway. You can follow me on Twitter at @DBWilson2. Helping out everywhere these days. Some Panthers, a lot of recruiting stuff will be coming down the pipeline, as we said, in a few weeks. Also wanted to give a last shout out to Larry Bluestein, who is in the hospital right now with COVID. His friend Harold Cole set up a GoFundMe that I've retweeted. We'll have a story in the Herald about it too. So if you want to donate some money to a true South Florida icon, like one of the biggest, probably the biggest non-player, non-coach figure in Florida football at this point, you can help out with the GoFundMe there. And obviously we're all thinking about him.
Yes, we are. Great.
Contribute
great
a lot
guy.
Of the world over the year. Helps us out all the time. So
good person.
Yeah. Just an all around great person. So thanks as always for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.